the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity. We're presently celebrating 20 years of supporting people with cancer with greater choice and a wealth of resources to meet the full range of challenges that they face following a diagnosis. There's one group, a relatively small but tragically rapidly growing group, children, who, along with their parents, are seriously underserved by integrative medicine for a variety of reasons. This is a terrible situation that we hope we can do something to improve on by highlighting the issue, as it's one that few people beyond those struggling with it even realise exists. By investigating the barriers to care and looking for creative ways around them. As part of that initiative, I'm speaking today to Francesca Watke about an innovative approach to supporting children with cancer that she's developed and that she's making available direct to parents.
Hi Francesca, many thanks for coming on the Yes to Life show as my guest today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I've been making efforts recently to highlight the immense difficulties that are faced by children with cancer and their parents in terms of the massive lack of resources that they're faced with. So this is for a variety of reasons, some of which I've already explored in an earlier show. But I'm talking to you today as your CEO and founder of an organisation that's called NEN, which is working to respond to this lack of resources in a particular way. So for people to be working creatively in this arena, they usually have some personal backstory, as the general public has got not very much awareness of how dire the situation is. So I'm interested to know what brought you to set up a company specifically aiming to help children with cancer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my career has been focused on drug development from an academic and a pharmaceutical perspective. But I really wanted to do something that had more direct impact on patients' lives. And when I looked into different areas, I was really struck by how few solutions exist for children. I had worked on a pain solution in another role that I had and saw how readily you can translate behavioral therapies onto a digital platform. And when I explored the pediatric oncology space, I was really struck by how pervasive a problem this was for kids and families with a diagnosis of cancer, and how I couldn't really find any solutions that were addressing this. When I dug a bit deeper and started speaking to physicians, practicing pain, pediatric pain psychologists, when I started talking to families, it was really overwhelming how similar their stories were, that, you know, aside from the initial diagnosis of cancer, which is obviously devastating for families, they routinely expressed to me how that managing their child's pain through this journey was the most difficult part. So, you know, with that information in mind, I started exploring how we could address pain for these kids. And I thought, what better way than leveraging play in children? Because children love to play, whether they're healthy children or sick children, kids are kids. So we started exploring the gamification of cognitive behavioral therapy as a mechanism to deliver the requisite skills that these kiddos need to help with the not only the management of their pain, but their interpretation of their pain, and help them change some of the patterns and the emotions associated with that pain in a meaningful way. And then, of course, help the parents on that process and on that journey as well. So the solution consists of an app for kids as well as a supportive tool for parents as well.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to go into all of that. Interesting. So I'm just fascinated. You have this, obviously, you've got quite a significant career behind you in drug development and mergers and acquisitions to do with drugs and everything. So this is quite a sidestep in a way to address a problem, which, of course, a mainstream approach would be a drug approach, wouldn't it, to pay? So, what prompted that?
Yeah, it very much is. You know, I've been involved in digital health now for about 10 years and feel strongly
okay.
that because of the access problems that many healthcare systems are facing, it's somewhat of a panacea. You know, many of these families in the oncology space are told that in order to see a pain psychologist, they're put on wait list for many
right.
times up to 12 months. So, you know, as a mother, I have three teenage boys. I can't imagine being told to wait 12 months if my child were in pain. But digital solutions can bridge that access gap and really help these kids. It was a bit of a sidestep, and I had a lot of folks and a lot of colleagues questioning why I was doing this, and why I was leaving, you know, a role in a pharma company to do this, or not going back to venture capital investing, which I was doing for a while. And I wanted to do something that had a bit more impact, you know, and that use what I've learned to help kids and to help them and their families really, you know, fill a gap in terms of a medical practice.
Right. So maybe you describe this as a bit of a passion project.
It very much is. It's
right.
It's been an incredible journey over the past 2.5 years, with a lot of highs and lows. The highs always come with talking to parents, and the most fun is working with kids. But you know, when we speak to clinicians, which we do, you know, on a daily, weekly basis, the unmet need for what we're trying to do is really hammered home, because you know, these clinicians are so overwhelmed; they just can't get to all the kids that need their help. So they welcome the solution.
Of course, the other aspect of this is very much around the empowerment that's involved in actually giving people a solution which doesn't require a clinician's appointment. And, you know, you get to see the clinician for 10 minutes after you've waited months. But of course, the pain that you're dealing with could be 24/7.
Yeah.
Or at any time anyway. And so having resources is so important. Okay, so you're based in Spain, Barcelona, I believe.
Yes.
But you've got an English version of your website.
We do.
This is it, and n.health. And I'm guessing the UK is amongst your target audience.
Yeah, so we're really excited to have launched the solution direct to parents in the UK, the US, Spain, and Portugal in English, Spanish, and Portuguese. You know, my background, I'm trained as a scientist, so I didn't want to release anything until all the rigorous clinical testing had been done, even though we have tested it with kids and with clinicians and families. But you know, we ended up releasing it much sooner than we had planned, and that's because the parents asked us to. They said, look, there's nothing. Get us something. We recognize
right.
it might be early, but we're happy to have it and to try it. And we spent a lot of time making sure that it was safe for kids and for their families, with clinicians, with practicing pain psychologists, because it is physician agnostic and it is self-directed. So we wanted to make sure that that we weren't doing harm. We only have the potential to help.
Yeah, absolutely right. So your company, you called it NEN, nice and simple and memorable, but where does that come from? Is it an acronym or what?
Yeah, well, it's a nod to where the company is incorporated. I'm American. I was born and raised in New York, but I've been living in Europe for the past 15 years, and we live in Barcelona, and then means kids in Catalan. And, you know, it took us a while to come up with the name. We wanted something that children could pronounce first and foremost, because this
right.
is for them. And that they can pronounce across different languages and countries. And also, because it is for children, we spent a lot of time making sure that it didn't mean anything untoward in any language. So it's easy to say across cultures and across languages, and it's quite short, so it's easy for kids to ask for it.
Absolutely right. Yeah, okay. So on to your actual offering now. So you've decided to home in on this particular under-resourced area of pediatric cancer support, pain management. So enormously important. I know this from personal experience, the kind of pain that children are likely to suffer along the way, and also the immense additional pain that parents suffer helplessly witnessing their child suffering. It's traumatic stuff.
Yeah.
So you claim to have an evidence-based tool for pain management. So what is it?
So we've leveraged what clinicians use in face-to-face therapy, tools that are known collectively as cognitive behavioral therapy, but it's really behavioral techniques that we teach to the kids so that they can address their pain in the minute. But the goal is that they can draw on these tools when they're in pain outside of the gaming experience. And then, you know, you mentioned that parents told us they feel very helpless. So we give them tools to help them help their kids get the best outcomes out of these techniques. So when a child completes a module, which to them looks like a game, an activity on the platform, the parents can understand the clinical rationale behind what the child has learned. They often get a little video that that demonstrates some of the skills that were learned. And then we give them some tips and tricks that they can use with their child. And whether that's, we call it in the app, belly breathing, but, you know, taking a minute as an example, breathing, it really resets the parasympathetic nervous system and allows for the pain to be interpreted and managed in a different way. And this was, you know, confirmed with what's true in the scientific literature and what works in the clinic. So we provide a number of different approaches, behavioral techniques that can help the children.
And got a bit of feedback from some of your users on what this has done for them?
Yeah, so, you know, we've started with testing with kids and parents in hospital settings. So, you know, to get their views on how they like it, on what impact it's having on their lives. Our most fun days are those when we get to work with the kids directly and we show them the solution and they give us feedback. We call them our NEN testers. So we've been working with kids from inception because it's really important to provide something that they enjoy because otherwise they're not going to use it.
No.
Yeah. And we know we're up against Peppa Pig and Fruit Ninja and Minecraft and Fortnite. And, you know, so we really do want it to be fun for them. We spent a lot of time and effort and resources and money to make sure that it's engaging for the kids, and they quite like it, and they also take their role as NEN testers very seriously. And
okay,
we had a couple of kids. We always preface it by, you know, this is to help kids in pain. You may not be in pain in the minute, but remember a time when you were, and the work that you do will help other children. And that sense of altruism is really important for these kids to know that they're doing something that can benefit other children in their situation or potentially in you know, a worse situation. We had a little girl who was about 8 years old. The platform has been designed for kids from 7 to 12, so school-aged children that can read. And she was 8, and I was asking her questions as she was going through the different games, and she put her hand up and she said, "Wait, I'm working." So she was taking it very, very seriously. I had never been called out by an 8 year old before, but I was happy to do it.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And then they gave us their feedback at the end.
Yeah, very nice. And it's interesting that you're kind of pulling on altruism in children. Is you think of that really as a kind of adult capacity, but yeah, it's actually can be pulled on in children too.
Absolutely. And it's actually a really important part of positive psychology that helps them achieve autonomy over themselves and over their pain. So,
I imagine,
you know, it seems kind of secondary, but it's actually part of the therapy itself. So, you know, in the future, we'll have the ability for children to donate the clouds that they receive. Clouds is our logo, but also our means of currency within the app to kids who might need it. This is done virtually because, you know, we initially thought about pairing kids with similar conditions, similar diagnoses, but we're told by the psychologist that it actually could be quite detrimental for the kids. So we do it in a way that is virtual.
Right. All right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, now you said that you've got the two apps, or the two aspects of the app. I'm not quite sure. Is it? Do you see it as two separate apps or as two sections?
They are. They're two separate apps that can be downloaded separately.
All right. Okay.
You know, the parents have to consent the children to use it, and then you know, the data that are collected go to the parents. The parents can share it with the healthcare team if they choose to, but it doesn't have to be integrated into electronic medical records, which presents a real burden for our hospitals and clinicians alike.
Okay, so the parents app, obviously you were talking about ways in which it helps them to help their children, which is very empowering, fantastic. Does that actually help them directly?
It's a good question. We thought about offering parents support as well, but you know, our focus, we really wanted the kids to be our focus. So the behavioral techniques are meant to be to benefit the child, and we don't. It gets a little bit thorny from a clinical validation perspective when you have two separate patients. So we wanted our focus and our patients to be the kids.
That said, of course, enabling the parent to help the child does help the parent. So,
of course.
Yeah. Okay. I'm guessing that there's absolutely no concerns about using this form of pain management alongside any others that might be in place.
Absolutely not. And in fact, the idea is that this would be used in conjunction with the background of whatever pharmacological agents the children have. One of our future goals is to test men with kids and see if, you know, potentially we could attenuate some of the doses that they're taking. But, you know, we're not making any claims for that until we have that clinically validated. The platform has been built to address pain management broadly for kids. So whether the kids have cancer or have a pain crisis during sickle cell anemia or post-operative pain, you know, kids with cancer or with other diagnoses that cause pain, even things like migraine, burn, the solution can be applied. We're focusing on kids with cancer initially because, one, it's the area of greatest unmet need in terms of pediatric pain support. But also the way care is delivered is quite concentrated. So tends to be at centers of excellence, at academic centers, at oncology centers. We're targeting that population first.
But you mentioned the other populations. I mean, sickle cell anemia is not something I was aware of until a while ago. And what a horrendous thing that is for kids to live with.
And it causes tremendous pain as well. You know, we didn't want
regularly. Yeah.
And they also tend to be populations which are not as well advocated for. So, you know, to be able to get them something that's readily available that they can download, you know, part of the mission and vision of our company is to be able to democratize pain management at scale.
Right.
So even for the solutions that can be purchased on the Apple Store or on Google Play, we have a buy one, share one approach because we don't want this solution only to be for kids whose parents have the ability to pay for it, but for everyone. So we allocate a license for a family who may not be able to pay for it themselves.
Brilliant.
And make sure that we can get it to them.
That's to sort of pay it forward.
Exactly. The Todd Shoes of digital health.
Mm. So obviously you've gone to great lengths to ensure it's safe. Are there any risks involved?
No, there are not. You know, we're hoping that we can impact these children's lives and their families. We'll continue to run those robust clinical trials. Eventually, we'll consider regulatory clearance in the different geographies that we're offering it. Or in the moment, we're pretty confident that it's safe based on the inputs we've had from clinicians. These are techniques that can help kids that are designed not to have any harm to them. We also introduce concepts around anxiety and depression, but in a way that's quite light for children. So we have three virtual companions. Dolores, which means pain in Spanish, delivers the behavioral techniques associated with pain. And then Sarah and Tony are focused on the serotonergic receptor pathways that mediate mental health. So Sarah, anxiety, and Tony, depression. But when we ask kids about what they think of Sarah and Tony, they say, well, Sarah is worried and Tony seems sad. But these are not meant to be replacements for therapy for anxiety and depression. It's just to underscore the children's feelings and their emotional reactions to pain, which are really important in pain management. Eventually, we'll continue developing a second product that will focus on mental health, and that product will likely have physician interaction due to the nature of the condition.
Interesting. Yeah, well, those two conditions are obviously all too often bedfellows with pain.
Exactly.
They go hand in hand. So it makes complete sense that you address it in some way. Okay. Can you tell us a bit more about the evidence that you've amassed so far? What can you tell us about what you know that it can achieve?
You know, so we're still in the testing phase. What I can say is that we're using techniques that we know do work in a face-to-face setting. You know, we're working to compare our solution with in-person care. But, you know, we're still early days with that. But
yeah,
we're leveraging techniques that that have a high degree of effectiveness in the clinic and in the scientific literature, and those are the ones that we've incorporated into the solution.
Right, so you're piggybacking on existing research, basically, to move forward.
Exactly.
Okay, makes sense. But you're looking to produce your own evidence, nonetheless, for your particular product. Obviously, it's important that your interpretation of that evidence is, well, does it work?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. I've just published a podcast in which a pain management specialist was talking about common misconceptions about the origin of pain. These are things that have been in place for, more than 100 years, and they lead to kind of limited thinking about the ways that pain can be managed. And he was pointing to the elements of pain that we create ourselves in response to feeling unsafe. So I imagine that the NEN offerings target exactly this aspect of pain.
Absolutely. You know, so much of pain and the interpretation of pain lives in our brain. That's not to say by any means that it's in our head, which is, I think, commonly thought of. It's, but the external cues that both children and adults get are processed in the brain in a way that can ameliorate or worsen pain. There's something right. known as pain catastrophization, which is also very much influenced by the parents' interpretations of pain. So in all of our assessments, we have a parent assessment as well as a child's assessment of their own pain. It's actually really helpful for the clinicians, because if they see the parents catastrophizing the pain, but the child thinks they're kind of okay,
right.
That impacts how they address pain in kids. And one of the great anecdotes that one of our clinical team members has told us that I think is really impactful, and this is adult pain, but it's as true for children, and this idea that pain lives in your brain, is there was a construction worker that his colleague noticed that he had a nail going through his boot. And so when he saw that, he immediately started screaming, was in agonizing pain. They called an ambulance, took him to hospital. They sawed off the boot to get to the foot when they realized that the nail had gone in between his toes and hadn't affected him at all, at which time the pain immediately disappeared and he was fine. But the thought of that nail going through his foot is what was causing him pain, even though there was no physical pain present. There's also a really interesting test or research investigation where they have someone put their hand behind their back, and then they have a model of a hand, and they hit the hand where it looks like it would be if they place their hand on a table, and they jerk back because they think it's their hand, even though their hand is clearly behind their back. So, the brain can kind of play tricks on us.
It's so interesting, isn't it?
It's fascinating. And, sometimes I geek out with our cognitive neuroscientists and our pediatric pain psychologists as they take me through this research. And it really underscores the importance of teaching children about pain. There's a lot of psychoeducation that we do about where pain is, how they can manage it. And it gives them this sense of autonomy over their pain, that they can they can control it to some extent. That's not to say that, you can control all of your pain, but there are aspects of it that you can control, and that's what we try to.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
It's such an empowering thing to find out because, you know, pain we're traditionally told is the thing we're kind of victims of. And you immediately feel you haven't got any agency, that it's not, you've just had to put up with it or whatever. And so this different model where part of it is your response to the situation. If we know that, then immediately you have some agency.
Exactly.
This professor we were talking to, he was giving the example of a footballer who spreads his ankle, doesn't take any notice, and just keeps going with the game because it's so important, as against somebody who's out shopping who does it and then they're lying on the ground in agony. You know.
Yep.
Because they don't have the same drive, which is making them see straight past it to their goal or what they're trying to achieve. So those two demonstrate the power of the mind.
Yeah, and also the power of the parents' influence over it as well. I remember when my kids were little, there were kind of two flavors of parents in the playground. There were those that the child would fall down and they would say, oh my goodness, you know, are you okay? Or what happened? And catastrophize the pain. And then the tears would immediately come. And then there was the other flavor, which I found myself in with three boys under three at the time, that they would fall and you would kind of clap and smile and say, okay, you're okay. You know, off you go. Obviously, if they were really hurt, the tears would have come anyway. But if they, you know, just had a bit of a skinned knee or a bump, they would continue playing. So, you know, it really speaks to how impactful and the parents' response is to their pain and how much it can impact how the child themselves feel. And, you know, the role of the psychological aspects of pain are so important, and it's so important to treat it in the moment while the child is undergoing medical trauma. There's a paper published last year that said that 59% of adult survivors of pediatric cancer have pain, and it's what they call idiopathic pain. There's no physical reason for this pain.
Really?
But it's because the psychological aspect of pain hadn't been addressed when they were children. So, you know, our goal, and we could never do these studies because they would take, you know, 40 years, is that the kids who are treated with behavioral techniques, whether it's in-person care or with NAN, would have a much lower incidence of pain as adult survivors.
Yeah, it really sort of brings home how much of this stuff is kind of learned,
exactly.
Really, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right about children. Children, they hurt themselves, they, you know, have a really good cry about it, whatever it is at the time. You stick the plaster on it, you say, yeah, all good. And they're literally, they haven't got time to mess around. They're just on, they want to get on with what they're doing, you know. But we kind of learn in time to sort of pore over these things and make something of them. And I think, yeah, we're taught that, really. And maybe if we weren't, yeah, we would be much more in the moment about it and therefore experience a lot less difficulty. But anyway, you're obviously capitalizing on that child ability to do that, which is a great thing. But it's very interesting to hear you talk about that you've got a two-layered situation to deal with. It's not the same as dealing with that up because you've got the child and you've got the parent there.
Exactly.
And they're both interacting and affecting the situation. Very interesting. There's a lot of parents for whom there could be two red flags raised by the prospect of a digital game-based approach. Well, first of all, video gaming. Everybody knows it's very distracting for kids, but it's got a pretty bad rap for its addictive nature, particularly for children. What would you say in reassurance to those parents?
So it's interesting. That was initially one of the hurdles we thought we would face with parents, and not all parents offer children screen time, particularly children as young as 7, which is what the age that our solution is intended for and has been designed for. That all changes a bit when a child is unwell, whether they have a diagnosis of cancer or of another condition. They're often in hospital. And so, you know, the limitations around things like screen time often go a bit by the wayside. Our solution isn't addictive in the sense that we very kindly and gently kick them off after they've been on for a little while, because we don't want them to go down a rabbit hole and kind of complete everything at once. We want to target them when we have their full attention. So we don't want them on for more than, you know, 10 minutes or so at a time. The exact number we'll figure out as we continue, researching this solution. But we think about, 5 to 10 minutes when they're on is enough.
Not much.
Whether that's a few times a day or a few times a week, it can be self-paced. The important thing is that they really learn and embed the learnings that they're receiving while on. So Dolores may pop up and say, "Hey, you've done a great job today. See you tomorrow."
Right.
So it's a gentle way to kind of, shuttle them off and have them do something else. Sometimes within the solution, we tell them to do something outside of the app, go read a book, go organize your desk if you're home. But everything that we offer to them is appropriate for where they are. We ask a bunch of questions in the beginning, are you in hospital? Are you at home? Are you in school? In school, they shouldn't be using technology, but are you going to school? Are they mobile? Can they get up and walk around, or are they bound to their beds, to make sure that we're not offering things that are not appropriate for where they are? For example, the child's in hospital, or she had in an isolation unit, we're not going to suggest that they go take their dog for a walk, as an example.
Right.
Because that's not something that they can do. So it's always meant to meet the child where they are and offer options to them. But a lot of the options that we give them are outside the app,
Well, it's interesting that such short sessions on this app can have the effects that you're claiming for it. So, that's great. I can't imagine too many parents getting too upset by 5 or 10 minutes occasionally. So the other red flag would be around something you've already mentioned, which is the data involved. So lots of people struggle day in, day out to slow down the rate at which data is extracted from their lives by various corporations. And they're going to be highly wary of making their children vulnerable to this 21st century scourge at an early age. So what do you say to them about the way that NEN handles personal data?
It's a very important question. We are fully HIPAA for the U.S. and GDPR compliant. Patient data has been from the beginning at the forefront of what we're doing. The parents will own the data that are generated from the solution. We made a decision early on, much to the chagrin of some of our initial investors, I must say, to not monetize the data that are generated.
Fantastic.
We will not sell data.
Good on you.
Even though if we did, we could probably, you know, make some money.
It's irresistible.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's irresistible. Every company thinks, oh, yeah, I can make some money out of these people's data. And so they all do. And it's just like hell
it's
for all of us.
It's not something we're interested in doing. We will use the data in the context of clinical research. But those parents that have consented for that work would be consented differently for that. But the solution itself, you know, for smart, it's not necessarily the smartest financial decision I've made as a CEO of the company, but I think it's one that that speaks to our values and really what we're trying to do with this solution.
Okay. Well, I'm not a parent anymore, but I'm a grandparent, but I would definitely be very pleased to hear you say that. Okay, so what should interested parents do to find out more?
So they can go on our website, nen.health. If they're interested in the solution, they can download it from the Apple Store or Google Play. And if they are interested in the solution but are not able to pay for it, then send us a note on our contact form and we'll make sure they get access to it.
Fantastic. And last question is, I bet you've got some plans of where you're going next. What are you thinking of next?
Well, we're really keen to get the solution clinically validated. That, of course, requires quite a bit of funding. We've applied for some grants across Europe and across the U.S., and we're actively fundraising to get more money into fund that clinical research, which is quite expensive. And then what follows from that would be submission to regulators. Our goal is that this would be a cleared product by regulators that could be reimbursed by health systems like NHS and others, or by private insurance companies around the world. Our goal is to get NEN to kids all around the world. So once we've completed our clinical validation, we'll kick off what we're calling the NEN Foundation, which will be funded by NGOs and grassroots organizations to make sure that we can disseminate it to kids in pain wherever they are.
So you could have massive languages you're going to have to tackle. Interesting. So, you know, at the moment, you can target parents direct. I mean, this because they're
That's
dealing
right.
with something safe, they can just go out and get it for themselves and look after themselves in that way, which is excellent. But you're wanting the advantages of having this thing recommended by the healthcare professionals direct and even given by the healthcare professionals direct.
So, That's right.
Yeah.
So we're working with, and we're in discussions now with about 15 hospitals across Europe, the UK, and the US to get the clinicians to use it, to try it, and then to recommend it to their patients.
Fine.
They're quite keen to use it. I thought there'd be some pushback from the clinicians because some would think that this is kind of impinging on the work that they do. The opposite has been true 100% of the time that we've spoken to clinicians. The folks that get into pediatrics in general, usually, but certainly in pediatric psychology, they're doing it for all the right reasons, and they really want to help as many kids as possible. They're frustrated that they have these long wait lists of families trying to get in to see them, so they're happy to be able to offer them a solution, either as an interim solution while the families are on wait list, or even in conjunction with therapy to just reinforce some of the learnings that they're getting in person.
That's really good. It's going to make it a lot easier, isn't it? You don't have the usual sort of status quo resistance to deal with, by the sounds of it. Great.
Exactly.
All right. Well, very best of luck with your initiative. It's very creative. It's something different. It's so much needed. I mean, it's I appreciate firsthand that it's a terrible out there for parents and children, and they need any resources they can get. So thanks for telling us about it today, Francesca. I'm sure there's going to be lots of parents listening who'll be going out to take a look at your development there, and will find it a godsend in that 24/7 nightmare that many of them can find themselves in dealing with pain. So, yeah, great stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me and for letting me spread the word about men.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Have a good rest of the day.
Kudos to Francesca for this initiative to put resources directly in the hands of the parents with suffering children. Do look at their website, it's nen.health, N-E-N, nen.health. And if you know someone with a child who has cancer, be sure to pass on the information. Coming up shortly in the Yes to Act calendar is an event for professionals that's called The Repurposing Revolution. It's an evening event being held at Friends House Euston on October the 15th and features Jane McClelland and Dr. Michael Castro looking into the phenomenon of drug repurposing and the latest findings in this arena. It'll be a fascinating and informative event, and there's the opportunity to attend in person or online. Find out more and book under events on the Yes to Life website, which is yestolife.org.uk. Thanks for joining me today. I hope you found today's show interesting and informative. I'll be back at the same time next week with another expert guest for the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.